Welcome back to episode. Oh, who was that? Was that Andy?
The best timing. Yeah.
Sorry. I'm still chesty. I'm not well.
Cough it out.
Hello and welcome to the Two Middle-Aged Blokes and a Gobby Bird podcast with me, JP.
And me, Andy.
And I'm Rosie.
It's a weekly podcast where we take an irreverent look at life, love, the universe, and, well, pretty much the shit that affects us all. Hello and welcome back to episode 3 of TMAB, Two Middle-Aged Blokes and a Gobby Bird. Hello, you two.
Good day.
Hey, good day. Yeah, good day. I don't know why you said good day.
Why are you now Australian?
What's wrong? It's just saying hello. Honestly, if you're going to get at me, can you get at me for something a little more important?
Rosie, you don't live in Australia.
Yeah, you're not Australian.
And Andy doesn't live in India, but for some reason he... an Indian accent.
Yeah, but he's spent a lot of time flying around the world.
Yes, correct.
Well, that's it. You're very cosmopolitan.
And living in the Middle East, there you go.
He's dropping it. Look, can we not have Andy Bingo? Every time he drops a country, get a prize.
We should do Andy Bingo, and then you have to do it in the accent of that country. We'll do
By
that
the way,
on
the Middle East is not a country, it's a region.
Well, just
to put it out there.
So welcome back to episode 3. So you're either listening to episode 3 because you thought the first two were pretty bad and they couldn't get any worse, but you just thought you might come back just to check. Or you thought the first two were okay and it can only get better and you thought, well, I'll just turn up and see what they're like. So thank you very much for coming back.
Yes, thank you for coming back.
Or maybe you're listening because you just want to listen to another disaster story about maybe dropping a dinosaur or... nearly dying in a wheelie bin.
It's all about you, JP. It's all not, the disasters.
No, I just wanted people to know that. This is not my podcast. It's not all about me.
Yeah, but we make you run it because we think it is all about you. So we're here to allow it to be all about you. We're here to support you.
Okay, I'm going mute now.
We do have disasters, but they're not as good as yours.
You're not allowed to get...
I'm not going to talk.
He's not allowed to have a sad on, by the way. You can't have a sad on. Sad on. That's
sounds
a great
sexual.
Word. Oh, look, if you could see him, ladies and gentlemen, you could see this face. He's staring at the ceiling now, licking his lips, irritated. It's because we love you.
Shall I tell you about my biggest disaster, which is very embarrassing because I am the cake lady, as you know. And I will take you back. Can I take you back to my cake disaster?
Sure.
Which isn't my cake. It isn't my cake. It was a cake that somebody else made for me on my wedding. And... it was an absolute disaster. So picture this. I'm younger, obviously more attractive.
Hang on. I just need a moment to do that. I still need a bit more of a moment.
Listen, if you can't look hot on your wedding day, then you're never, lots of work, lots of effort, lots of money.
You still look hot, Rose. You still look
hot.
Your husband says so.
I put a dress on. I was feeling feminine.
Rosie, how long ago was this?
25 years.
Oh my God.
25 years.
Silver, isn't it?
I don't think I was born. Was I? I don't think I was born in 25.
Yeah, shut up. Shut up. We were friends. So 25, cast your mind back 25 years. I've got the full-on wedding where I'm looking hot, remember? And we have a full-on guard of honour. So all my colleagues are there with their swords.
All your friends that you really wanted there. Were you there, JP? Did you go?
I didn't go, Andy. Did you go, Andy?
No, I didn't go.
What happened to our invites?
There is a reason for that. It was the guard of honour, and I picked.
And what? We weren't good enough?
We were too short.
I picked the good-looking ones.
Hang on. I know who was in your guard of honour.
Yeah,
Rosie.
So do I.
And what does that tell you? What do you take from
you're
that?
Blind.
So I'm now at my wedding, okay, and I'm married. And I'm back on the top table, about to have my wonderful dinner. And my sister, who is looking beautiful, is looking across at me. This is all on video, by the way. This is all recorded for posterity. And she's saying, don't worry, they're putting it back together. And I looked at her and I said,
she's
again,
mouthing this.
You can see it. If you can lip read, you can see it. I'm saying, what? I don't know what she's talking about. And she says, they're trying to put it back together. And I'm like, What? At which point, one of the staff comes up to inform me that they have cut my cake, my three-tiered wedding cake, into little pieces. Not me. No. I haven't cut it. It was all ready. They've cut it. The chef, so here's the story. The chef was told to cut the cake in the cold store. And he came out and he said, it doesn't look like it needs to be cut. It's a wedding cake. Yeah. Cut the cake in the cold store. Different wedding cake they were talking about. Different cake.
What flavour?
Chocolate. So three tiers of chocolate. Bottom tier, dark chocolate. Right. Then milk chocolate, middle tier.
Why? Hang on a minute, nice. Rosie. Why? Mm-hmm. Why did you say it like that?
What do you mean?
Dark chocolate.
I don't know if I'm sexy or mischievous.
No, you don't have to be sexy about dark chocolate. No, dark chocolate's dark chocolate. It's just really quite bitter.
Well, I didn't notice that inflection. If you take that from me, then fine.
Don't forget, I get to edit this. So I'm going to listen back intently.
Hang on. Well, I'm so confused about the dark chocolate mumblings and stuff like that. So the guy had it in the fridge and he just chopped it up.
The chef.
Yeah, into little pieces.
The chef.
Into little. So if that imagine
without direction.
Each tier, with direction. So he was told to cut the cake in the cold store.
Who told him?
Now
who
you're
can
getting
we bash?
A little bit.
Oh, no, we're not violent on this show. We wouldn't do that.
Well, listen, Andy, it wasn't me, Andy, because we weren't invited.
No, you're right. Did you try the cake?
This is an area I didn't want to get into, but I'll get into it. It was my uncle who owned the hotel and he was referring to a different cake. And he told the chef to cut the cake in the cold store. My uncle's now dead. Before you start on him. And he was very much loved. But essentially, he told the cake to cut the cake. Told the chef to cut the cake in the cold store.
They
cut the wrong cake.
He gave the wrong instructions, effectively. He wasn't precise enough.
He was incorrect. Yes. Oh. So the chef cut the cake into little pieces. And the thing about my cake was each tier was like a big, like chocolate cake, but on the top of it was a chocolate rose, like a massive chocolate rose. And that was detachable. So that came off. So they'd taken the chocolate rose off and they'd cut the cake into little pieces. So they literally were trying to piece together my cake like a jigsaw and then put the rose back on again. But
it looked like Minecraft.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I was sticking little bits of Minecraft cake together.
Ahead of my time, I had a Minecraft cake 25 years ago that was held together, get this, with doily. That's the only way they could do it.
They put doily over the top of the cracks.
There is literally a photograph of me and my husband with a ceremonial sword cutting three tiers of doily. Yeah.
When you cut in with the sword, did you use a sword to cut it?
Yeah. Well, it was cut. It was like pretend. We pretended.
Did the doily then get into the cake?
Oh, what a nightmare.
Did it go...
It was shit. It was really shit. I have to say, at the time, and anyone will know a bridezilla, I was a little bit bridezilla. So I'm sat in the middle. You can see on the video. I am there with my dad on one side chewing the inside of his mouth as they're telling me, going, it's okay. It's okay. And my mother-in-law on the other side of me going, I'd be furious if I were you.
Yeah, what a nightmare.
And me... I look at the camera, and I haven't seen this for 25 years. They've only just converted it to digital because, of course, we lived prehistoric age before they had digital.
Yeah.
And I look at the camera
VHS.
And you can literally see me. Remember, I'm looking hot and demure and ladylike. And I look at the camera and I say, turn that fucking thing off.
That is brilliant.
Is there a photograph of this?
There is. You can have it.
Well, we need to put it on the website.
Need to see this.
We need to put it on the website.
It needs to be shared.
You must have been furious.
I was bridezilla.
At that point, did you know you were going to be the cake diva?
No.
Cakes are going to be my thing.
No idea.
Could you make cakes at that point?
No, didn't make cakes. And now when people say to me, what is the biggest cake disaster? I mean, I've had some mishaps, but wrecking someone's wedding cake into little
wrecking
pieces.
Cake,
that's something else. So
and how did the chef, what was the chef? I mean, did he come and apologize or was he just...
They were upset. They were mortified. Yeah, they were mortified.
But more importantly, Andy, just think of all those people there that were invited, that were... really, really, sort of upset that the cake had doily in it. But, thankfully, because we weren't invited, of course, we didn't experience that. So that's all right. That's a winner.
But JP, being a chef, he would have cut it into very nice pieces. So doily or not, they'd have all had a bit of that cake we didn't have.
No, and I didn't even save you any.
I didn't get a bit posted. No.
Didn't save your piece.
No, that's awful.
We'll put that on the website.
And, I feel very sorry for you about your cake. I'm sorry that your cake was chopped up.
If anybody else has got disasters, whether they are cake related or not, Yeah, do get in touch. You can send us an email to hello@tmab.uk and we'll put the photographs of your wedding cake then, Rose, on the website. Yeah.
So you see, JP, it's not just you. It's not all about you. You're not the only one who has disasters. No, look at you now. Are you going to tell me? Are you going to trump me now and tell me you've had an even more disastrous week? Have you had a disastrous week?
No, Rosie, I haven't really. I've had a quite positive week. I was in London this week and had a bit of time before one of my meetings. And it was just, it was a lunch meeting, 12:30, you know, very corporate. And I sat down on a bench because it was lovely weather in London. And this guy sat opposite me and he had a burger in a kind of one of those, you know, sort of burger carrying bun holding things. Polystyrene, you know, burger holding thing, you know, like it wasn't holding the burger like naked.
Oh my God.
No, I know, I was trying to think of the word. Anyway, had this burger, right? This is not the story. This is actually not the story.
Container.
But that's not relevant.
JP, nothing's ever relevant. It's all about, from our point of view, your story can go hang. It's the fact you can never find the right word. And when you do find the right word, you don't know how to say it. He was eating a burger out of a burger box.
I'm going to cry. Anyway, and I sat down and I was listening to a podcast, which is great because, you know, we love listening to podcasts. And there's this lovely lady called Mel Robbins was on it. And she was talking about how that to be a better person, she's clinically proven that when you high five someone, have you heard of this? The high five rule.
Anyway, no.
I think she's a psychologist or something in America. And she's figured out that when you high five someone,
Stop high fiving us. You've shown us what a high five is. You can stop high fiving now.
Okay, no, I'm good at it now. Okay, when you high five someone, it releases in like endorphins, or there's serotonin is increased in the body, and you feel better. And she's worked out that the body can't distinguish whether it's someone high fiving you or you're high fiving yourself in a mirror, and therefore every day. Wash your teeth, etc. When you get out of the shower or something.
High five yourself. Wash your teeth.
Wash your teeth. Oh, God. Right.
Oh, God. I love you, JP.
I started this story saying, you won't find this funny. And you were just taking the piss.
No, because it's obvious where you're going. You're now telling us that you high five yourself in the mirror, aren't you?
Yes.
Naked. Brushing or washing your teeth.
I am, but the mirror, I can only see half my body, so that's fine. Okay. And I'm there with my hair back.
So are you suggesting that you can high five yourself as long as you can't see the whole of your body? Whole of your body, not a high five.
That's
moment.
Not relevant. The whole if you're in a full length mirror, I'm sure it works the same. But anyway, I haven't got a full length mirror in the bathroom. And basically I'm high fiving myself. Okay. And I've done it for 5 days now. And I feel better. But the beauty thing is that as I was listening to this and I was feeling a bit more euphoric, going, oh my God, that's amazing. This really unfortunate person who'd been living on the streets probably or something came up to this guy with a burger. Okay, I'm going back to the burger now. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And said, are you going to spare any change? And he said, mate, have my lunch. And he gave him the lunch.
Nice. That's amazing.
Nice. I thought that was bloody amazing. I thought
that's what
wonderful.
I mean. It's amazing. I think it's brilliant.
I was fucking starving and I thought, I'm not sure I would have done that.
Wait a second. No, JP, JP, we've got a guy eating a burger and we've got a naked JP high-fiving himself as long as he can only see the top half of his body. What have the two got to do with each other? Did you high-five the burger? I don't get it.
No. And I high-fived the guy after he'd given away the burger.
Oh, okay.
And he looked at me and he said, what? And I went, mate, I'm just high-fiving you because I thought that was a really good thing to do. I forgot that I had my headphones on, of course, and he hadn't been listening to my podcast about high-fiving. Oh. He was just doing something funny. And of course, you're in that moment when you think everybody is listening to what you're listening to, but they're not with headphones.
Do you know what that is, JP? That is a girl thing or a me thing, because my husband will say that I start a topic with him assuming that he knows what's going on in my head, and he doesn't. He literally has to start the conversation with me halfway through.
I'm 100% the same. Alex will look at me blankly and say, what are you talking about? Yes. You know, and I'll have gone on thinking that she knows exactly what I'm saying. And it might have just whizzed around my little brain, but there we go. It's ridiculous. But,
Andy, she's not the only person that does that.
I'm just relieved. I am very relieved that the man who high-fived you with the burger did not have to do it whilst you were naked in the bathroom.
No, he didn't high-five me.
You high-five. You can't high-five on your own.
No, he left me hanging. He left me hanging.
Look, well, I was about to say, though, that you've been hanging in the bathroom, JP. Do bits shake when you high-five yourself?
No, I just put my hand up and I give myself a high five. And I don't shake.
So the good thing about your story, let's put it this way, is that you're saying a homeless guy got a burger. Yep. So he's really chuffed.
Yep.
The guy that handed over his burger is now feeling really self-righteous, and quite rightly so. And you high-fived him, and that produced serotonin in you that put you in a jolly good mood as well.
Yeah. And so, the guy with the burger and the guy who gave the burger haven't got a fucking clue why I did it.
I've got a couple of problems with this. I've got a real problem. Number one is, who has to clean your mirror and other handprints all over your mirror? Because that would actually piss me off massively.
I don't touch.
High five. You don't touch.
No, it's hard.
So you literally just wave at yourself.
It's,
I mean,
it's a non-contact high five. I leave myself metaphorically hanging.
It's so wrong.
Number two would have been, this would have been a much better story for me if the guy had said, thanks, mate, I appreciate it, but I'm a veggie. I would have much preferred that as an ending. And therein, that would be a better story for me.
Well, there we go. Yeah, so we've had a lot of...
woof, woof.
Yeah, woof, woof. Yeah, yeah. Is that a euphemism? Maybe it is. It could be. maybe not. Anyway,
there are some other things to do with dogs, but
yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Stop.
All right. Right. Stop.
Car
stop
parks.
It. No.
Listen, I've been practicing with my dogs. I'm really an expert on dog behavior now. Andy's behavior, I have zero idea how to control that.
I've got no idea how to control him either.
No, I'm still practicing with the dogs though.
So we've been inundated by texts and messages and emails by listeners who want to know more about the dog lady. So we got her on the show. Hello, Steph. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Rosie, we've got some questions, haven't we, following on from your extravaganza with Steph this week.
Well, we've got too many questions. Seriously, Steph, I don't even know where to start. So what I'm going to start with is the obvious one, is why do people come to you mostly? What do they need help with?
All sorts of different things. Most commonly, it would be the things you'd expect. So loose lead walking and recall, because everyone wants to go and walk the dogs at the park. They don't want to get dragged there on the way, and they want the dog to come back when they call them, preferably straight away. It's all about body language. That's probably the biggest tip I'd give to any dog owner, is to learn about dog body language. Because if you can understand what your dog's trying to tell you, and dogs communicate with the body language all the time, and they are constantly watching yours. The more you watch your dog, once you know the signals to look for, the more you start to see. And once you see them, you can't unsee those signals. So things like low-level stress signals. If a dog's uncomfortable about something, they will offer a tongue flick or a yawn, or they'll look away from the thing that's bothering them. And if you can see those early signals, then you can change a situation to prevent conflict or to diffuse the tension in the first place.
So I've taken some of Steph's tips, of which there are so many. It blew my mind, actually, because the things that Steph did so naturally and intuitively, I was like, trying to catch up with all the things she was watching, all the body language, little turns of the head, yawns, licks, all of those things. And I was trying to take it all in. But at the same time, she's taught me some tricks, and some of them worked with my husband.
I do.
You know, it's all about reward.
Yeah. Reward-based training. You just use beer for him.
It is all about a little bit of a treat. And he kind of really does hang on, and with the view that he might get something at the end of it. He never does, just so we're clear. He never does. In the meantime, what Steph's just said is really interesting, because ever since she's been to me, I've been watching mine really carefully. And with Merlin and his tooth problem, so Merlin had a tooth out and then suddenly
would eat again. This is one of your Jack Russells, yeah.
One of my Jack Russells, who's 11 years old. And when he was back to food, because we realised it was a toothache, we were giving him soft food. Well, he clearly likes that, because now, exactly what Steph's just said, he will eat dry food, but he waits to see if I'm going to put some soft food on top of it first. And I can see him waiting, like, yeah, where's the rest?
So this is a big question. We've got a terrier, and she's fantastic off the lead with other dogs in the country when we're walking around or wherever it is. But when we're at home and we've got the garden, which has got a little path by it that someone's every now and again, people walk past, she will run from one end to the other end and she will bark at them as they're running past. And I wonder, if she was on the lane with the people, she wouldn't bark. Mm-hmm. Is that a territorial thing, or how do we stop her bark? It's so annoying. Now we want to say stop it, and we shout at her. And I've been told that you shouldn't shout because she thinks you're then barking with her or something. Is that right?
As to whether she thinks you're barking with her, she'll know your stress level's gone up, and her stress level's gone up because there's somebody on the other side of the barrier. So yeah, it's a territorial behaviour. It's instinct driven. She won't think about it. She'll just do it. It's a totally natural behavior. And that's the first thing to recognize, is that when you bring these animals into your house, they do have a repertoire of natural behaviors that we need to expect to see. So we won't fully eliminate that, but we can help her with it. So what we need to be doing is supervising her when she's outside, redirecting her. And that means calling your dog away and having them perform another behavior that they know well, that they can do, that they feel comfortable with. And that's how you build that nice positive relationship with your dog, that you're not shouting at them for doing something that comes so naturally, but you're instead saying thank you for letting me know that there's potentially an intruder the other side of the fence, but please come away and come in the house and lie down and do this instead, so that you're reinforcing the desired behavior instead of punishing the undesirable but natural behavior of barking at the fence line.
Reinforcing the good behavior. See, we're coming back to your husband again, Rosie.
My husband. Yeah. And also, has it ever occurred to you, JP, your dog's warning people? It's not a territorial thing. They're warning them, stay away. Lunatics. Lunatics inside. Save yourselves.
There's a lot of them around here.
But do you know what Steph's just talked about is exactly what I've been watching out for ever since she's been here. And it's really interesting that I kind of thought Steph would come and say, this is how you punish this behavior and this is how you deal with this behavior. But actually her answer to a lot of my questions was, no, redirect them to something positive and reward them for the positive. And that's exactly what we've been trying to do. And it has lowered the sound levels in the house, because as you say, JP, your first instinct is to say stop or get down or stop jumping up at me, and your level goes up. But Steph just with her body turns away from them and then rewards them for something that they've done that's really good. And I was like, yeah, God, I never thought of that.
I thought
shouting was the answer.
The easiest way of lowering the sound levels in your house is for you to stop talking.
Do you know how quickly you've aligned yourself with my husband, JP? It's not taken long at all. He's been saying this for years.
I stole that line from Andy. I have the other one, and I don't know whether this was made worse in lockdown because of COVID, but, you know, because when in COVID, of course, we were all with our animals a hell of a lot more than we are now, you know, if we go away or go out for the day or go out for half a day or whatever it is. And, you know, this leads me on to my question about timing. So I'm told that dogs don't actually know. They can't tell the. I know they can't tell the time, as in they can't say yes.
No, they can't read the clock. In the morning. No,
I get that, but they. But we can go away for 20 minutes, or we can go away for 3 hours, and we get the same response when we come back, which is she's really pleased to see us, and we sometimes think, oh, we've been away far too long, but I've been told that some dogs actually don't, or maybe all dogs don't actually appreciate how time ticks on.
I don't agree with that idea. I think dogs have a very good body clock, and they are very aware of time passing, because they all know when it's dinner time. Regardless of whether they can read the clock or not, don't they? They all dance around thinking it's 6 o'clock, where's my food? And they're always happy to see you when you come home because they're emotionally bonded to you. So that's a nice thing. But they definitely know time passes. And a certain length of time is acceptable for most dogs to be left on their own.
What do you think that is?
The general rule is that for dogs, young dogs under 2 years old, we'd say no more than 2 hours in 24 hours on their own. Because we've bred dogs over the hundreds of years to be companions with us, to work with us, to live with us. Our lifestyles in the last 100 years have changed an awful lot, but dogs haven't. They still need to be with us as much as they can be, but we need to be out more. So 2 hours in 24 hours is enough for a young dog. For an adult dog, 4 to 6 hours, depending on the dog. I know that mine cope fine with 4 hours. 6 hours is too much. And I can tell that they're stressed and it's been too long and they're ready to do something, and they're glad to have me back when I get there. Separation anxiety is quite a specific condition. So normally what you'd see is vocalizing while you're gone. So howling, barking, crying. You'd see destructive behavior. So people will come back to a shredded bed. The dog's shredded its own bed or its toys or the blanket it was left with. The worst I've seen, a dog actually started eating into a wall and door frames and things through the sheer fear they have.
So they're basically, they've been left too long, they're getting stressed, and then they take it out on something they can neither chew or destroy.
They try to find a way to cope, and some will show escape behaviours as well. So they'll try to leave the area that they're in. So a dog that's crated might squeeze its way out around the bars and get themselves into a really awkward position. And I know people who have come back and found a dog halfway out of a crate stuck. Separation anxiety is rooted in fear. They only feel safe when you're there with them. But there'll always be signs, whether it's vocalizing, destructive behavior, or indoor toileting. So you might come back and find they've had a wee or a poo or diarrhea or whatever. And that tells you that that dog was really, really unhappy while you were gone, and you've got something that you need to work on.
Well, on that, let's raise the tone a bit now.
Well, JP does that sometimes when we leave him too long.
Does he?
I need a pee. it sounds like
having listened to your last podcast and your toilet issues weren't off the menu.
it's funny that when we reconnected, it's the first thing that we all agreed we had in common is that we needed the loo a lot more than we used to.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god, no. Well, we had an issue trying to get through a whole podcast recording without having to we have a jingle for a reason halfway through. It's not a sec, just go to another unit. It's a sec, let's play the sec, right, stop the recording, let's all go for a pee, come back, see you in 5 minutes. Actually, Andy usually goes and gets a glass of wine.
Dude, my problem is I've got too many things that I could ask Steph. I think we're going to have it back on.
Yeah, we are. Okay, so here's just a little teaser though going forward. I say, so what's the strangest one you've had?
The strangest is similar to the issue you described, actually. I see lots of strange behaviours in dogs, but they're normally driven by either underlying neurological issues or unsuitable environments. So the dogs learn coping mechanisms for things or underlying health conditions as well. But the one that does spring to mind is a lady who I met a few years ago who couldn't walk her dog, basically. Nothing wrong with him. Very healthy. No problems when I went round, got his harness on, no problem, very excited, on the lead, straight out the house. And I'm stood there thinking, what on earth is the issue? Because he doesn't seem to have one at the moment. And as soon as they left the garden gate, he shot across the pavement and led down on the grass verge. And I don't mean lying down like you teach you down, like led on his tummy. He was led down in the play dead position, limp, and not moving. So then she says to me, look what he does. Why does he do this? And why is he doing this to me? And she's pulling him along, limp as a sack of spuds at the end of this lead. Totally unable to get him to walk. And this had been going on for weeks and weeks. And she was at the end of her rope. And I did have to turn away that time. I just composed myself a little bit before we started working on it because it was so funny.
What was wrong with it?
It was an unfortunate combination of rewards and poor reward delivery timing-wise. So the dog had learnt... Well, puppies will really commonly want to stop and look around at stuff because the whole world's brand new. It's all really interesting. Yeah. Sometimes it's a bit scary and they want to sit and look at stuff, so they'll stop. But us humans, we go out with our preconceptions of... a 20-minute walk, we go up the road, we go through the park, and we come back down the lane. Well, your dog doesn't leave the house with any of those ideas. He just wants to go and explore stuff and look at stuff. So when he'd stopped to do his puppy looking around, she'd got sausages out of her pocket and got him moving again and then giving him his piece of sausage. Well, after a couple of days, a couple of weeks of this, he'd realised that when he stopped, she put her hand in her pocket and got sausages out. So while she thinks she's teaching him to walk, unfortunately... poor lady had been teaching her dog to stop, and then that had progressed to stopping for long periods and then stopping and lying down and then stopping and lying down on his side and then stopping completely and getting pulled along by his harness.
So he's just thinking, sausages, give me the sausages.
Sausages, please. As soon as you put your hand in your pocket, I said, let me just try something. I put my hand in my pocket and he got up straight away.
Oh my God.
So bless her. Luckily, I mean, behaviours like that are relatively easy to undo. And within 10 minutes, we had him walking and she never had a problem since. But it was just about treat delivery. So we just had to stand there for 5 minutes until he got bored of lying down. Then he got up and sniffed and then we put our hand in our pocket for the sausages.
Walking, I wanted to know about walking when you when people walk dogs. If you've got a field, if you've got a garden, do you really need to walk them?
You do, unfortunately,
as opposed to just letting them out in the garden.
From an exercise point of view, they'll still get to run around, but from a socialization point of view, if you ever want to take them on holiday with you and have them be well-rounded dogs that have experienced the world, because that is the process of socialization, is not just to meet other dogs, but to learn about the world, learn about other animals, but most importantly, to learn to interact appropriately in response to the other animal's behaviour. So we have to take them out. We have to let them see traffic. We have to let them see people walking with walking frames, umbrellas, prams, sheep, all the different things that they're going to come across in their world so that they're not scared of them. Whilst you've got them in that malleable kind of young developmental stage of the first 2 years. Preferably as soon as possible. So get them out walking as soon as their jabs are working.
Fab, fab. Well, look, we could go on. We've got tons of questions. So I think we'll get the listeners to write in and hello@teamab.uk and send in any of the questions, et cetera, you have for Steph. And we'll try and collate them all together and get Steph back on. And maybe we can answer them live on one of the podcasts. Steph, thank you so much indeed for your time. It's been unbelievably fascinating. And I've got some free therapy for my dog, which is awesome.
And for yourself.
You're very welcome.
What?
Sorry, and for yourself.
And for myself. Yes, exactly.
So it works, honestly. I'm going to keep going with the husband reward situation. I think where I've been going wrong with my hubby is exactly where I was going wrong with my dogs, thinking I needed to punish them, but actually... You just need to give them the idea of a reward.
You need to reward them. Thanks very much, Steph. Actually, brilliant. Right. We'll see you soon.
Thank you.
So, Andy, your life must be empty now that you've done the marathon. How on earth are you going to top that? Have you done anything that's as exciting as the marathon?
No, not yet. Nothing to top it quite yet. But I am looking at buying a new car.
Oh,
a car.
In fact, I bought the car.
Okay.
You bought the... Right. Hold on. Are you looking at buying a car? Have you told your wife you've bought a car? Is this what's happening? Are you surreptitiously entering into the conversation that you might have bought a car?
Oh, my God. Rosie, surreptitiously. I can do it.
You couldn't.
You couldn't.
Repeat.
I'm the one... repeat. Surreptitiously.
Say it again.
He can't do it
I'm
again.
I'm not saying
do it. Again. I don't think he can do it again.
Okay.
He's done it. We want you to do it, Rosie.
I just love the fact that you were thinking of buying a car and suddenly you've bought a car, which means that you are actually only just owning up to the fact you bought a car. Was this a impulse purchase?
No, it was a sensible purchase, knowing the amount of miles we do and where we go and what I need the car for.
Is it an electric? But it was, is it an electric car?
It's not electric. It's actually annoyingly, it's not electric. No. I'd love it to be electric. It is a big car.
Well, why did you buy it? Seriously, why not buy an electric car now? Why would you?
Well, I don't
do
get
that?
Enough support for the electricity bills, so plugging it in is about as expensive as petrol at the moment, isn't it?
So you've bought a car because you need a car, and you've done loads of miles. You've not gone electric. What on earth possessed you then to buy this car?
Because we had the previous one, so I just bought the newer model, still second hand. But I mean, it was nice.
But what details?
What details? What do you want to know? Black, diesel.
Is it black? Is it black?
Well, it's actually dark blue, but it's black. Well, it looks black to me, but when you...
Is it?
Well, it's very, really dark blue. It looks black.
What's it called? What do they
call it? It's a VW Touareg.
I wanted to know
what its name was. Have you not named it?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, Percy, probably. No, I don't know. What is... I don't know. Something blue. I didn't really look.
Why the hell would you call it black? Andy, you're...
Because it looks black. I can't help it.
So does it have light.
And it's got cruise control. It's got all that kind of stuff going on. Has it got lane assist?
Yeah, it's got
what's the other one? Lane assist, cruise control. What's the one when you get this adaptive cruise control
that seems to not work particularly well? Anyway, I mean, yes, I purchased the vehicle and I'm having a few issues with it at the moment.
But hang on. So going back to my original question, so you're trying to top the marathon. You've done something a bit more spectacular. Seems to me you've bought a car, right? Okay, which is blue, not black, and it's got all these bits that don't work. Why is this car going to top the marathon?
Well, I have to be honest with you. I've been trying to work out that if I return the car or can get it returned or when I return it, how I retain the number plate, because I bought it purely for the amusement of the kids and myself based on the number plate.
You bought a car for the number plate. Big question.
Utterly ridiculous. Well, it is utterly ridiculous. The actual start of the number plate is BJ69.
No. So, BJ69.
Yeah,
is the number
couldn't
plate.
Believe it. I really regret buying the car based on the number plate. But no,
that's what you did.
Yes. No, I didn't.
That was an exaggeration. No, don't try and back out of it. You definitely did do it for the number plate, didn't you?
Well, yes, I did. I saw the car, I liked them, and that was the right number plate. So I kept it.
You thought it was karma. How's that worked
out
for you?
Karma. Brilliant. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. Oh, so, right. So you bought a fantastic, bought a new car. Love the fact you bought it for BJ69. But that allows me to play a new jingle. Because I reckon this is a very important part now. This is...
Education Andy!
Yes! We are going to educate you, Andy, about electric cars next week.
Yeah? I think there's a lot of things you can educate me on. Very happy.
Can I just play this again? Because I'm so proud of this.
Education Andy!
Does that mean next week is going to be all about why Andy should not be allowed to buy cars unassisted? You need a chaperone because you bought a car for a stupid number plate.
Now regret it. But anyway, more on that when you teach me about the electric cars next week. I look
Morons
forward to hearing
word.
All about more on indeed.
So we've done it all. We're all experts at dogs now, and not just me. We're all dog experts. And JP, I would never leave you hanging. I wouldn't. Andy would. I wouldn't.
I would.
We can leave the audience hanging till next week.
Thanks for listening to the Two Middle-Aged Blokes and a Gobby Bird podcast. If you've enjoyed hanging out with us today, please don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review and follow us on Instagram. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, please just message us either through Instagram or send us an email to hello@tmab.uk. Many thanks.